This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Late last week, a bipartisan group of U.S. senators appeared with President Bush to endorse a compromise immigration bill. Over the weekend, critics on the right and left objected. Business and immigration proponents found such serious problems as well. But proponents argued it's time to stop talking and take action before the issue gets subsumed in politics. It may be too late already. Some Senate Republicans want more time and say a vote this week is unrealistic. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she'll wait to see what the Senate comes up with. As debate begins in the Senate today, we hope to answer your questions about what's in this bill, how it emerged, who's for and against which parts of it, and why. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can email questions to us at talk@npr.org. And you can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later on in the program, the opinion page. This week, Major League Baseball, Barry Bonds, the holy grail of the home run record, and steroids. But first, questions and answers about the immigration bill. And we begin with NPR congressional correspondent David Wellner, who joins us from Capitol Hill. Hey, David.
Hi, Neil.
And let's begin with what's in this bill. We hear descriptions of it. It seems to be a bill that goes after everybody's concerns and doesn't seem to please anybody in particular. But you describe it, if you would.
Well, I think the word for it is compromise. And, of course, being a compromise, it's going to leave everybody somewhat dissatisfied. It's a massive bill. It covers everything from securing the borders or attempts to secure the borders to workplace enforcement of employment laws, immigration laws, to dealing with 12 million people who are thought to be in the country illegally. And I think that last point, the 12 million and what to do with them, is probably the biggest flashpoint, because the proposals in this compromise are being called by opponents of it an amnesty. And those, of course, who support this say, well, it's the only realistic way to deal with these people. You cannot deport all these people.
And on the other hand, you have proponents of the bill saying, well, look, those of you on the right, this bill calls for a point system to establish priorities to allow immigrants in. The point system puts a greater value on the skills and training of potential employees. And that ought to be make you happy, you employers, too. But employers say, look, it doesn't solve our problems. And then those on the left say, wait a minute, by emphasizing skills, you're leaving out family considerations.
Yes. Well, the point system, you can earn up to 100 points for your application for a green card or a permanent resident visa. And in the past, it's been employers' needs that have often determined at least the employment-related visas that have been granted. Under this new system, it's simply going to be how much education you have, how many job skills you have, and only 10% of those points could be what your family's ties are. But businesses saying, well, look, you know, we might be getting a lot of very highly skilled people coming into the country, but they may not be necessarily the people we need for the jobs that we can't fill right now. While they were pushing for having a more merit-based system, they're finding that this is not necessarily going to bring them the people that they need for those jobs.
Well, what questions do you have about what's in this bill, why it's in there, what groups are opposed to it or for it, and why? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. Let's begin with Brian. Brian's calling us from Arizona.
Hi. I just wanted to know if there's any talk about if there are stringent regulations on employers, because it seems to me that as far as illegal immigration is concerned, the main way that you treat it is to remove the incentive. These people are coming over here, and they're trying to earn a living and trying to build themselves up most of the time. I mean, there's a drug aspect, too. But the thing about it is that, you know, they're coming over here, they're trying to bust their butt, they're trying to work hard, and they're trying to earn a living. And so if you remove the incentive, which is the employer, then you won't have as big of a problem.
Well, for an answer to that, let's see if we can go to Paul Giblin. He's a reporter for the East Valley Tribune in Arizona, and he joins us from his office in Scottsdale, Arizona. Nice to have you on the program today.
Well, thanks. Nice to be with you.
And what about Brian's question?
There is some discussion to do exactly what Brian suggests, to crack down on employers to make the penalties for hiring illegal aliens tougher than they are now. Another provision would make it easier for employers to determine who is and who isn't an illegal immigrant.
And that means that they would have to check with a government database to see if somebody is okay.
Right. This is an idea that's been talked about for years. John Kyle, the U.S. Senator from Arizona, has discussed this for years. He notes that your debit card that you have in your wallet right now is pretty smart. It's a pretty smart card. It can track all your financial dealings. But our Social Security cards are stupid cards. They're just paper cards, and they're easy to copy. So he says, why can't we take that same technology that banks have been using for decades with debit cards and put it into some sort of a Social Security card? It might not be a Social Security card, but something along those lines, so you can verify who you have is who you have, and that person doesn't have the same Social Security number as 500 other people.
Mm-hmm. David Wellner, and how does this manifest itself in the legislation?
Well, the legislation calls for this kind of employment verification system to be in place before you can have the guest worker program that it calls for, and also for dealing with the 12 million undocumented people in terms of getting them some kind of a path to citizenship. But of course, you would have to have documents that could be electronically verifiable. And there are all kinds of questions about privacy that are raised by this. Senator Chuck Grassley, a Republican from Iowa, is saying that this is giving the Department of Homeland Security too much access to people's Social Security numbers and to their tax returns. And he sees it as an invasion of privacy. I think we're going to have a lot of arguments on the Senate floor this week about that.
Mm-hmm. Brian, does that answer your question?
Well, kind of. I was talking more about punishment for hiring them, but yeah.
Is there punishment for greater penalties for hiring illegal aliens, illegal workers, David Wellner?
There would be fines for hiring them. It's not clear how many infractions an employer would have to incur before heavy fines were levied, but they would have up to 18 months after the enactment of this legislation to verify the employment background of all new hires, and they would have to do the verification of everyone they've hired within 3 years. That's more than 140 million people whose employment would have to be verified. And there are a lot of people who are saying that's just wildly unrealistic.
Mm. Brian, thanks for the call.
Okay.
Let's see if we can get a question. This is from Lee, and Lee's with us from Pennsylvania.
Yes, hi. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
My question is, why doesn't the bill consider the point system such as Australia and Great Britain are kind of doing right now, which are two of the Western powers that take in a lot of immigrants?
I'm not sure our guests can answer that question. They can answer questions about what point system is proposed, but I'm not sure that they can answer questions about the ones overseas.
Well, I'm not asking about the ones overseas. The question is that we're not even considering a merit or point system. We're thinking that it's totally bad, where I think it's been working quite well in other countries. Why can't we make it work here?
Well, I could jump in there.
Okay, David.
Actually, we are looking at a merit-based system. This would be going from a family-based system, essentially, that we have right now. About 58% of the visas, that permanent residency visas that are granted, the green cards, go to family members, and only 22% of them are skill-based right now in the U.S. And Canada, by comparison, 60% of the permanent visas it issues are merit-based. And that would be the big shift in this bill. You would no longer have a green card lottery, which you have right now. It would be done entirely by how many points you score based on your education, on your job skills, and your family ties, essentially.
Mm-hmm. And Paul Giblin, this point system as it's been proposed, how is that going down there in Arizona?
It depends whom you ask. The immigration supporters don't like the new approach. They like the old approach where you can bring in, as David just mentioned, you can bring in your family members, you can bring in your uncles and your cousins and whomever. Under the new provision that they're discussing now, you would be able to bring in your minor children, and to a lesser extent, you could bring in your parents. But all these other relations would pretty much halt.
And you could bring in your spouse, too, of course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Good point.
Yes. Lee, thanks. Excuse me, is this Leo?
Yes, it is.
Thanks very much for the call. I missaw that last vowel in your name. Let's talk to Warren, and Warren's on the line with us from Georgia.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
As I understand it, we have 12 million illegal immigrants here. They've managed to stay pretty well under the radar, as they are. Now they're expected to come out out of the dark and pay a $5,000 fine, go home and apply for a visa to come back. I don't know that our lawmakers have thought this through very thoroughly. And also, if they do, if by some miracle this does occur, who gets all that $60 billion? The federal government? Or does it go to the states who have footed so much of the bill for health care, social programs for these people?
On the question of where the fines would go to, David Wellen, do you know?
I'm not sure where the fines would go to. I know a lot of that money would probably be used for administrative purposes just because so much has to be verified about these people. Background checks and a lot of red tape goes into actually getting this process to move forward. But I think there's an important point about what Warren raises in terms of how would this really work, because these illegal immigrants would not be able to get into a system of a path towards citizenship before the borders are certified to be secure and a verifiable employment system is put into the workplaces. They'd be given probationary visas in the meantime, and there would be a one-day background check for such visas. But it's not clear that if they don't get the borders secure and the workplace verification in place, would those probationary visas expire? That's not clear. They would have up to 18 months to apply for what are being called Z visas, which would be four-year visas that would get them on a path towards getting a green card. It's not clear how many of those they could apply for consecutively. Lots of unanswered questions about this. And, of course, this whole idea of a touchback, of going back to your country of origin, only the head of a household would have to do so. But it's not clear, what would be worked out for that person to come back into the U.S. Once that person has touched back. It's something that raises lots of questions about people who've survived up until now illegally in the system, having to do a lot of very onerous things to make themselves legal.
Thanks. Lawmakers will tell you there's a few incentives for them to do that. One would be you could regularize them. They would be able to get auto insurance, which they can't now. They could get a driver's license. They could help get loans. And another key provision is they would be able to travel back and forth between their home countries, in many cases Mexico and the United States.
And we're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, more questions and answers about the immigration bill. This is the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. As the Senate readies to debate a new immigration bill, we're taking your questions about what made it into the compromise legislation, what groups are for it, who's against, and what it all means to you. 800-989-8255. You can also send us email talk@npr.org. Our guests are David Wellna, NPR's congressional correspondent, and Paul Giblin, a reporter for the East Valley Tribune in Scottsdale, Arizona. And David Wellna, let me ask for you, this bill was the product of months of negotiation, talks that were held behind the scenes.
Yes, it was. And it was interesting to see who took part in the talks this year, because last year, of course, the Senate did pass an immigration bill that was backed by both Democrats and Republicans. This year, the Republicans taking part in the talks changed somewhat. John McCain was a major actor in last year's talks. He was virtually absent from this year's talks. Instead, the other Republican senator from Arizona, John Kyle, was a leading actor. And what's really changed from last year to this, of course, is that Democrats are now in control of Congress. And Republicans, looking at the prospect of immigration legislation going through and the fact that President Bush very much wants this as a domestic win to claim, realize that if the Senate passes a bill like it passed last year, they thought last year they would send it over to the House and the House would move it to the right and make it much more conservative. This year, the prospect is that they'd send it over to the House and it could move to the left. And and I think that's one of the reasons why conservatives had a strong motivation to get involved this year and get what they could out of this to make sure that whatever the Senate passes is a more conservative version of what they passed last year.
And Paul Giblin, the people you speak to there in Arizona, do they feel as if they have been consulted about this bill, or did it come as a surprise to them?
I believe it came as a surprise to almost everyone. The Republicans hate the bill. I mean, your hardcore Republicans hate the bill, and your immigrant supporters don't like many aspects of it. The $5,000 fine, which they believe is too high, the end of chain migration, which they like.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email question from Tom in Kansas. What provisions does this legislation contain to address illegal immigration that continues despite the new laws, presumably after it takes effect? Are the punishments more severe? David?
Well, the punishments, I think, are a little bit vague at this point because we don't know quite what the remedy will be for, especially the 12 million who are already in the country.
Mm-hmm.
There is, of course, this plan to hire 18,000 more Border Patrol officers in the next 18 months. Now, there are only 12,000 right now, and it's extremely hard to train these people, to recruit them. I think this 18-month window, which Homeland Security Secretary Chertoff says is realistic, a lot of lawmakers are going to question that assertion. The other thing is that they're saying there have to be 27,500 beds for keeping people who are caught rather than catching and releasing them, which is something that's been done in the past,
mm-hmm.
releasing them over the Mexican border especially. Those kinds of consequences would be in place. But in terms of punishments, jail fines or fines, that I haven't seen spelled out in the legislation. But this legislation, much of it is still being tweaked, and I think more of it we're going to be seeing in the next few days.
Sure. Paul Giblin, I guess it presumes that after the legislation takes effect, is after the border has been declared secure. This is a concept that I know some people there in the Southwest find laughable.
Oh, absolutely. When you go to the border, you'll see what an impossible job it is to try and build a wall across 2,000 miles of land, and much of it in Texas is a river. How do you put a wall against a river? I was down near Yuma, where President Bush was last year, and we were looking at a fortified wall, and it was great. You had the wall and the secondary wall and this no man's land in between and stadium lights and all that sort of thing, and that was great. But then if you were to drive literally less than 10 miles away, there's nothing. I mean, absolutely nothing, just nothing. You can walk from Arizona into Sonora, Mexico, and not even know which state you're in, which country you're in. That's what it's like. And this new bill would put about 500 miles total of new walls and vehicle barriers, which are these pylons that stick up from the ground to make it impossible for cars to come barreling through. But even 500 more miles is nothing close to enforcing the border.
Let's get another call in. This is Fernando. Fernando with us from Boston.
Yes, hello. Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Just a quick question. As an immigrant myself who came here in 1967 with my parents, you know, we all had to wait our turn. And one of the things I need to ask is, you know, I'm definitely pro-immigration in the sense that it's going to be controlled, that that we just can't open our borders up to the pro-immigration advocates are saying. They basically say, let everybody in who wants to come in. And I don't think that's a realistic approach. The conservatives on the other side say, let's basically shut everything off until we feel that we're comfortable with who's coming in, when, and from where.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unrealistic. Now, we come up with this bill that Senator Kennedy and the bipartisan Senate came to agreement on, and basically said, okay, look, we have 12 million illegal aliens in this country that we just can't send back. And I think any practical person, left, right, or center, has to agree that that's not a practical process, is to look for 12 million illegal aliens and ship them back. So that's not a reasonable approach. So I'm taking a look at this bill, which, you know, I'm sure this is just, one millionth of what's in that bill. And I look at it and say, okay, it's not perfect, but it fills in some of the gaps. And my question is, this doesn't look like to be, the only thing I have with this is that it looks like it's not going to be able to be enforceable down the road. And I think that one of the things that you had touched on earlier was the workplace enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
I think in 1986, when the amnesty was put through, One of the provisions was that it'd be tougher workplace enforcement, and I don't think that ever was really put in place, because it came back and said, you know, that's not really doable. It's just not, you know, we can't ask employers to be immigration agencies or immigration agencies. They don't know what kind of documentation we have. Is
mm-hmm.
it fraud? Is it real? Is it fake? So that's one part. Second part is, what's going to happen 5 or 10 years down the road when all of a sudden you have another 6 million illegal aliens? Then what? You know, I just think that there's no this is sort of a short-term approach by Senator Kennedy in the Senate to get things done quickly and not really think 5 or 10 years down the road and say, okay, how do we fix this? I'll take this offline. Thank you.
Okay, Fernando. David Wellner, everybody portrays this as the comprehensive bill designed to solve all the problems. Does anybody ever actually argue that it is?
Well, I think that it's plausible to argue that this is a plan that is premised on workplace enforcement, that immigration is driven by the demand for workers in this country. If they can't get jobs in this country, they're not going to come. Those 5 or 6 million who might come in the future wouldn't be here if there were tough workplace enforcement. The problem is, how do you do that? I mean, the hospitality industry alone, restaurants are said to hire the largest number of illegal immigrants, the hotels, other businesses like that. Do you have inspectors all over the country going into these places? It's been a real problem when they've done this in the past. There's been a huge reaction from the Chamber of Commerce saying it's unfair to single out certain industries such as the meatpacking industry. And I think that any government that tries to carry out that kind of workplace inspection is going to take a lot of heat from the business community. And in the past, I think that's why after 1986, it never really happened. They just didn't have the political will to go and be big brother and snoop in all these places as they would have to really discourage the employment of illegal immigrants.
And Paul Giblin, another big factor is agriculture. When we were down in Tucson to do a show about the border and immigration, we had people on the show, farmers, who said you cannot pick a crop without employing illegal workers. Does this address their problems?
It does. There's a separate provision in this proposal that we haven't discussed yet that would have a different kind of visa for agricultural workers to come over for a couple years at a time and then to go back to Mexico. They would be able to renew that 3 times for 2 years each, so they could spend a total of 6 years here and then go back to Mexico, presumably with a lot of money they made from picking lettuce, at least by Mexico standards.
Here's an email from Carlos in Colorado. I'm an immigrant waiting for a green card through a family member. I understand chain immigration would be terminated under this new plan. My question is, if this plan is adopted and made into law, what would happen to all those who have approved applications and are currently waiting for their visas to become available? In my case, I've been waiting 9 years and have an estimated 2 more years for my visa to become available. Any thoughts on Carlos's plight, David?
There is that situation is addressed. There are as many as 4 million people who are waiting outside the country to get green cards to come in, and they have decided in this legislation to increase by 440,000 a year the number of those green card applications that will be processed, and they hope to get rid of the backlog within 8 years. At which point, those 12 million people who are in the country could begin the process towards getting green cards themselves. But that's the thinking of that they would be at the back of the line. Of course, the line for all those other people is outside the country. The line for those people, for the 12 million, is inside the country.
All right. Let's see if we can go to Juan. Juan's calling us from Indiana.
Hi. I'm kind of have the same question. I'm right now waiting for my papers, you know, they've been approved and everything, but it just takes forever. Like that guy, you know, 9 years, you know, my priority day is, I think it's back in 2005, so I got to wait right around 10 years. I mean, with this new bill, if it gets approved, is that going to speed up a little bit all this? Because, you know, that's a lot of money, the money the government is going to get. I mean,
the $5,000.
Speed up a little bit.
Yeah. Paul Giblin, can you help him out on this?
Well, similar to what David said first, it would move the other people through. I don't think I haven't heard anything that would affect the speed of which they get their immigration matters settled, and everyone else would come in at the back end of that.
So you would at least be first before everybody else, Juan?
Right.
Okay. Good luck, Juan.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. David?
Well, you know, I think this question of being in the country or not being in the country and applying for the visas goes to the heart of the question of fairness in this proposal. And I think it's really hard to get around the fact that you have people who are going to be allowed to stay in the country who don't have the documents that they should have, and other people outside the country who've begun the process long before they have, and they can't be in the country. I think another thing, we haven't talked about it so much, but this temporary guest worker program is premised on the idea, as Paul said, of that workers are in the country for 2 years. They have to leave for a full year before they can come back for 2 years, leave for another full year, and then they can come back two more years. And after that, they have absolutely no path to citizenship in the U.S. And, you know, people who look at this, especially employers, say, how can they work with something like that? Who can have any kind of a life where you spend 2 years in one country, you go back for a full year, and then have to come back again for 2 years? And they're saying it will both depress wages in the U.S. in certain industries by having those workers here, but it will also be extremely disruptive for those people coming in as temporary workers. They cannot bring many family members with them. Of the 400,000, only 80,000 family members are going to be allowed to come with them. So it seems as if we have two different tracks here. One, a track towards getting people who are here illegally into some legal situation, but also bringing in hundreds of thousands of people and telling them, you can work here, but you have to go home again.
David Wellner, thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Sure, Neil.
David Wellner is NPR's congressional correspondent. Paul Giblin, we appreciate your time today as well.
Oh, thanks for the invitation. I enjoyed it.
Paul Giblin, a reporter for the East Valley Tribune in Scottsdale, Arizona. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us to talk about how this debate is being reported in the Spanish-speaking media is Gustavo Arellano. He's a staff writer with the OC Weekly, author of the book Ask a Mexican. He joins us from his office in Santa Ana, California. Nice to speak with you again.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
And after a couple of days to digest it, how is this immigration bill being covered by the Spanish-speaking media?
It is the biggest story in the Spanish-language media. Really, just the topic of immigration in general has been the top story in the Spanish-language media since the marches of last year. But with this new bill out there, in a way, there's a sigh of relief from the Spanish language media and from its audience, obviously almost all immigrants and a big chunk of it illegal immigrants. So the questions now is what's going to happen next in Washington. So there's a bit of apprehension as to what exactly is going to follow next.
But do editorials basically say we have a quibble here and there, but basically okay?
They're happy that Congress is giving the glimmer of amnesty to illegal immigrants. And there are a lot of problems that Spanish language media has. And one of the things is this idea that adults will have to return to their country of origin and wait to apply for those Z visas. Others, the other thing that they're talking about now is giving more points to people with higher education, better job skills than just manual skills for that matter. Mm-hmm. And also this idea of putting priority over that as opposed to family reunification. So those are the big problems that a lot of editorials have with it.
What about Latino politicians? They've had a chance to take a look at this as well.
Latino politicians are, people like Fabian Nunez out here in Southern California, and Antonio Villaraigosa, the mayor of Los Angeles here, and of course Luis Gutierrez, who's sponsoring his own bill in the House. They're going out, and for the most part, they're happy with it. They say that it's necessary to legalize the status for all of the illegal immigrants in this country, but they also have reservations with splitting up families. They also have reservations. One of the big reservations, actually, is with this guest worker program. And especially in the Latino community, there was something like this in the 60s. It was called the Bracero Program. And the ultimate effect of that was it just created more migration to the United States. If there's this idea amongst the government that you could bring in workers and they somehow won't want to live in this country, that's just not the case. So I think the Spanish language media is fully cognizant of that and therefore is criticizing the guest worker program as being unreasonable.
You've mentioned the word amnesty a couple of times. I would think people in the Spanish language press would understand this is a hot button word.
Absolutely. And I think, though, among Spanish language reporters and also just the Latino community in general, they don't make any qualms about it. This is amnesty. This is an opportunity for illegal immigrants to legalize their status and go on the road, even though it's going to be years and years and years, according to this proposal, to become American citizens. And so, obviously, and there's also that understanding that in the English language media, there is that hesitation to use that word, except, of course, from conservative critics of it who say this is nothing more than amnesty.
Yeah. And finally, and quickly, Santa Ana has a large immigrant population. How are people there reacting?
Santa Ana, by the United States Census's estimation, is the most Latino city in the United States with a population of over 100,000. It's basically 85% Latino. And there is relief that there is something happening in Washington in regards to illegal immigration. There's also apprehension. People, families do not want to be split up. And in some cases, of course, these immigrants, they also don't want to pay the penalties that would that they would have to pay to get a Z visa and all that. So there's happiness, but there's also wariness and apprehension.
Gustavo Arellano, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Gustavo Arellano, staff writer for the OC Weekly, author of Ask a Mexican. He's been talking to us from his office in Santa Ana, California. Coming up, the opinion page and an argument that all the Barry Bonds bashing shows is a double standard. Why aren't white players suspected of using steroids facing the same kinds of criticisms? Dave Zirin joins us. Do you think the criticism are fair, or is there a double standard? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. This is NPR News.